This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Hey folks, I'm really excited for the show today for a couple reasons. Number one, we have two TriDot athletes making their TriDot podcast debut, and I always like conversations with new friends. And number two, we are talking about racing. Yeah, races, remember those? Look, I know it has been a good minute since that 4 a.m. alarm clock has woken you up for a race day, but as we kick off the new year, we are cautiously optimistic that more and more athletes will be returning to racing in 2021. So we need to be ready for that. Today, I'm joined by two athletes that were fortunate enough to race in 2020, and they'll be sharing their stories and kind of giving us all the inside scoop on what differences to expect at our own next race event. Our first athlete I am pleased to welcome to the show is Sarah St. Vincent. Sarah is from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where she works negotiating gas and diesel contracts as a hydrocarbon deal maker. Her first triathlon was 70.3 Texas in 2014, and since then, she's gone on to two Ironman finishes with several 70.3 medals earned along the way. Sarah has been training with TriDot since 2019. Sarah, you ready to do the podcast today?
I am very excited to share my experiences and frustrations from the past year, but I have to laugh at the 4 a.m. wake-up call because it started at 6, so I was actually awake at 3.
Oh, that's gross. I hate the mornings. I would race more often if it didn't involve getting up so early in the mornings. So now Sarah, we mentioned that your first 70.3 was in 2014, and you shared with me there's a pretty good story on how you even got signed up for that in the first place. Do you want to share that real quick with us?
Yes, a group of friends and I were sitting on a patio drinking mimosas, and I signed up for a race and then subsequently had to go buy a bike and a bathing suit because I didn't own either.
Fantastic decision making. And here you are many years later. Also joining us is TriDot athlete Dan Caskey. Dan is from Somerville, South Carolina, where he is a physician's assistant by trade and an award-winning barbecue pit master by hobby. Dan discovered triathlon during a health journey to lose 100 pounds and has been training with TriDot since signing up for his first race in 2019. He's a USAT certified coach and a certified bike fitter. Dan, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks, man. Let's break out the sanitizer, pull back the mask, and get fired up for this one here.
So I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wrap up with our cool down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Whether it's during a training session or just going about day-to-day life, we all know what it is like to get a random song stuck in your head that you just can't seem to shake. Sometimes it is a welcome tune that we enjoy, and other times it is an earworm we can't wait to be rid of. So Dan, Sarah, to warm us up today, what is a song that you really like that would get on your nerves mid-race if it were to get stuck in your head? Dan, I'm going to start with you on this one.
All right, I struggle with this a little bit. I'm one of those philosophical athletes. When I run with music, I kind of there's a couple that inspire me to push harder. I was thinking Matthew West, What If, you know, but it's happened the other day. Somehow, almost it played like three times when I was on a long run. So it's Love Lockdown, Kanye West. It just kind of got me.
Love Lockdown.
Yeah, 2 miles. See how you feel about that then.
How have I never heard this song before?
You haven't heard Kanye West, Love Lockdown?
I don't think so.
It's catchy. I mean, it's a good beat.
Yeah, Love Lockdown's a great song. But yeah, I can see that after a couple miles just being like, okay, Kanye, I get it, bro. I get it. My love's on lockdown. Let's move it along. Yeah, that's a great pick. Sarah, what was that song for you? Something that you like that if it got stuck in your head at first, you'd probably be happy. But after a while, you get real annoyed.
So it's not quite as new as a Kanye song, but Karma Chameleon by The Culture Club. And that has actually gotten stuck in my head in previous races. And it it's really great at first, but it gets old really, really fast.
It's really, really hard to shake when it gets stuck in your head. And that's kind of the thing. Like, I'll kind of purposely on a race morning listen to the music I like, hoping that if something's going to get stuck in my head for the rest of the day, it's going to be one of those songs I heard that morning, because logically that's how you would think it would work. But that's not always the case, right? Like, sometimes you get a song in your head that you're like, I haven't heard that in years. And somehow it's the song that stuck in my head. A song that does it for me. This is totally random, but I wasn't planning on sharing this. The main theme song from Beauty and the Beast, for whatever reason, that song gets in my head on like long workouts. And we don't listen to that often. I'm not just firing up the Beauty and the Beast soundtrack like randomly. But yeah, like sometimes I'm just like running and I'm like, Beauty and the Beast. But anyway, my answer to this question was not that. My answer to this question, a song that I actually like that gets in my head, that gets annoying, is Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke. That came out many, many summers ago now. And the year it came out, it was just like the song of the summer. It was played on all the radio stations all over the place. By the end of the summer, since they played it so much on the radio, everybody was so over Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke. And so now when I hear it, like, it was like so many years had to pass before I could like that song again. And so now I'm back on board with Blurred Lines. It's a song I enjoy. If it comes on my Spotify or something, like I'm happy about it. But if that got in my head on race day, it would be game over. It would get to me. I would have to just frustratingly walk off the course and just storm off.
Yeah, that morning DJ can set you up, man. Sometimes he gets a good one, and sometimes, man, they'll set you some crazy song and you're done.
Hey, guys, we're going to throw this question out to you on our social media. Go to Facebook, I am Tridot, and join that group, be a part of that group, and you're going to see this question out there. What is a song that you like that, if it were to get stuck in your head on race day, would get on your nerves? You know, we've thrown out a couple good ones here. Love Lockdown by Kanye, Karma Chameleon by Culture Club, and Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke, and a bonus shout out to the Beauty and the Beast soundtrack. What is something that would do that for you?
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
All through 2020, triathletes had to roll with the punches of races getting moved, deferred, and or canceled. Some athletes were able to get in a race or two, but many never actually made it to the start line at all. Obviously, for many, many reasons, we are hoping and praying to see a healthier world in 2021. And here at Tridot, we are cautiously optimistic that more athletes will return to racing this year. So with so many deferrals and cancellations, I know all three of us just feel grateful to just have had the opportunity to get out on course this year and get a race in. Sarah, what races were you able to participate in this year?
I was able to participate in the Onalaska Triathlon, which was a half distance, and then Ironman Florida. I was originally signed up for Texas 70.3 in Galveston and Texas Ironman in the Woodlands. So, of course, neither of those happened. So I was grateful to at least be able to race those distances in different races.
Yeah. And on Alaska, I know Coach John Mayfield raced that one. I know Coach Jeff Raines raced that one. I know we had some more Texas.
Joanna.
Local Texas. Joanna and Amy from Hissy Fit Racing raced that one. I heard so many tales about how miserable that race was. Can you share about that for a second, why that was the case?
So I got up there late and they had all ridden the bike course. And I remember asking John, like, hey, about the bike course. He's like, yeah, it'll be fine. And after the race, he goes, I guess we should have talked about racing on hills. I'm like, yeah, maybe a little bit. I will say though, that is the race that convinced me that I needed a new bike. So I finished that race and bought myself a new bike before Florida. So that was a good thing. But it was really hot and there was not a lot of direction on where to go for the run. So thank goodness for the spectators that were just hanging out around. So we're like, where do we go? Which way do we go? How far do we have to go? Like, one guy finished and he goes, my Garmin only says 10 miles. They're like, turn around and go back out and run three more. I mean,
I missed something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just heard even Coach Jeff Raines, who's a strong runner. He was like, it was so hot. Like, we were all just walking the run course and so it's funny. It's your first race of the year. Everybody's so excited to race and people get out there and it's just a miserable, hot, muggy South Texas day. So kudos to you for enduring.
Yeah. At one point I ran by John Mayfield and I was smiling and he just looked at me and goes, shut up. I didn't even say anything. We were all just dying out there.
Man.
Anybody happy? Yeah. So a few of us from the TriDot team drove out to Panama City Beach, and we socially distanced, you know, while cheering you, Sarah, and kind of our other TriDot folks on that were able to do the Panama City, you know, full Ironman in Florida. Now that was a different day. It was a beautiful day for racing. What were just some of your favorite moments from the day?
So a few things. So I got to actually see Chris Nikique on the bike course and then on the run course, which was so inspiring.
And for our listeners who aren't familiar with Chris, he's the first athlete with Down syndrome to finish an Ironman. And so Ironman obviously was rightfully so kind of, you know, publicizing his attempt at that. And I know he was on social media quite a bit leading up to the event, kind of sharing how his training was going. And yeah, we saw him several times, Sarah, on course. And you actually, Sarah, I was hanging out, you know, at these races. I try to keep the bib numbers of our TriDot athletes on the Ironman app pulled up so I can try to get pictures and video footage of you guys. And so I was waiting at the bike mount line for you to come through. And Chris, I don't remember if Chris came through on his bike right before you or right after you.
Before,
Yeah, but it was right around the same time that you came through. So I got to see him start the bike course. But yeah, super cool to see Chris finish as the first athlete with Down syndrome.
He, when I passed him, so I saw him on the bike and passed him. We were all just yelling out words of encouragement. And I just yelled, you know, like, go, Chris, keep going. And the guy who was helping guide him, he goes, okay, Chris, now's when you say thank you. I'm like, he doesn't have to say a damn thing to me. He just needs to keep doing him and just keep going. He just needs to know that we're here for him. He doesn't have to respond one bit. But another moment, it's memorable, kind of funny. I was on the bike course and I, you know, everyone's just doing their own race and I must have passed a guy and he saw me pass him. And then he came flying by me, standing up on the bike. And as he's passing me, he says, well, if I can't even pass you, you know, meaning a girl, you know, then I don't even deserve to be out here, which I thought was so rude. I'm like, whatever.
The nerve.
So I
remember maybe a year or so ago, I was introduced to the term being chicked. And there's the kind of that, that chauvinistic guy mantra is, I don't want to get chicked on the bike course. I don't want a girl to be passing me on the bike course. Listen, I don't throw around swear words like very, very, very casually. I'm very intent when I use them. I love it when a badass woman cyclist goes by me on the bike course. Like, listen, if you're fitter than me, like you're fitter than me. And there are hundreds of women on every single race that I do that are fitter than me and will pass me on the swim, the bike, and the run. It's awesome. Good for them. That guy can get over it. And listen, he was like, to pass you back, I mean, he's over biking, he's overextending himself, and he's going to suffer on the run. And that's, you know, that's just karma, right? That's
that. But that was the best part was, I mean, I did my entire bike based on heart rate. So I just tried to stick to 145 on my heart rate the whole time. So as soon as the wind shifted directions and I had a little bit of, you know, I had a little bit to give, I passed him again and he muttered something as I passed him and I never saw him again for the rest of the race. So
justice.
Yeah, it was awesome. Justice. But, and I will say though, the thing that was great was seeing you, John, Elizabeth and Steve. I mean, saw you guys multiple times. The last quarter of the race of the run when I was dying, Steve, I think, was driving and seeing me every mile just to make sure I kept going. He's like, just keep going. I'm like, I hate you. Stop talking.
But what a great partner / Sherpa for the day. Yeah.
Yes.
That's one of the amazing things about triathlon. Like you said, the support makes such a huge difference.
Yeah.
I remember I was passed on a course by a pregnant lady. And on the run portion, and I'm like, all right, she's suffering. I can suck it up a little bit and go, you know. And then, you know, when they pass you with the age numbers on there, you know, it's like, okay,
yeah,
this 70 some year old person just passed me. Like, let's go. But I had a similar experience on on the end of an Olympic where some friends happened to be in town and they found me on the course. They were texting with my wife. And I come around the corner where I'm getting ready to walk. I'm like, at that stop sign, I'm walking. And they start yelling and screaming, go, Dan, go, Dan. And of course, you can't walk when people are there. So, man, that picked me up. I needed that so bad. So it's huge encouragement seeing people out at the race. It's so cool.
So Sarah, you had just a spectacular 11-hour, 56-minute finish time, which was a PR for you at the full Ironman distance. So congratulations on that. What was it like crossing the finish line, and what did that sub 12 finish time mean to you?
So the finish time for me was a bit unexpected, although John continuously told me, he goes, I think you're going to go sub 12. I'm like, you are
crazy. What did your race X say? What was the race X prediction?
I'd have to go back and look. I think it was 1230, maybe 1240. I don't think it was under 12.
Ooh, you beat race X.
Yeah, I know. I think I need to go back and look. But I guess I didn't really think it was a possibility until I hopped off the bike. And of course, when I saw y'all at the beginning of the run, he goes, you have 4.5 hours to finish this run to go sub 12. Go.
Wow.
So I padded off with my bag of dill potato chips and my running bottle. And a couple hours later, I finished. It was different crossing the finish line. So I did Texas in 2015. And of course, then you had all the spectators around the finish line. You had all the people cheering you in as you're going into the shoot. I mean, you still had people cheering you in as you were approaching the finish line, but of course you didn't have anybody around the finish line because they had that completely blocked off. But it was still awesome. They had music playing and it sounded like people were cheering and Mike Riley was announcing. So you got to hear, you know, Sarah St. Vincent, you know, you're an Ironman, which is pretty awesome. There was this brief moment as I was running down the chute. I'm like, man, I should really throw my water bottle so that I don't have my water bottle in my pictures when I'm finishing. I'm like, this thing's like $30. I don't want to throw it.
And what's funny is you're making those kind of decisions, like when you're 12 hours into a race and like dehydrated and starving and like exhausted. And that, like, I think John said it before. I don't know if he said it on the podcast or just off the podcast to me, but I've heard him say like, know how you want to look for that finish line picture, like have it in your head. Like, am I going to throw my arms up? Am I going to ditch my water bottle? Am I going to take my jacket off? Am I going to zip up the tri-kit? Like, you know, kind of have some idea of what you want that picture to look like, because once you get there and you're exhausted, the critical decision-making isn't always there. So,
yeah.
It was
cool though, but I didn't actually think I was capable of hitting that time. So it was pretty amazing finishing.
Yeah, no. And we were thrilled for you. And we'll talk a little bit more later about some of the differences in from your first Ironman, you know, without COVID precautions to your second Ironman with the COVID precautions. But the finish line, while we're talking about it, was one of those, you know, there wasn't the ability for fans to gather at the finish line. So fans were kind of spread out, you know, and to their credit, they had a very long finishing shoot. The finishing shoot, I think, was over half a mile that you were on the carpet in the barricades. And so there's a lot of space for fans to spread out and kind of be there. And so that's where we were kind of set up, trying to watch some tryout athletes come in. But the finish line experience itself, you know, we as fans could not even get close to it, you know, to see you cross. So I'm glad Mike Riley was there. If you got to have somebody there that's not your friends and family, it needs to be Mike Riley. So Dan, what I like about your season that's a little bit different is you were able to get in a variety of races. And you know, with your trusty RV camper, you know, you and your family just made a road trip travel experience out of a few of them. And so following the Caskey fam on social media this summer, was a lot of fun. What races were you able to get in that way?
Man, it was a great year for us. I was actually able to line up 11 times in races, from running races to triathlons. And I was starting to add it up when you asked me. I think we put about 5,800 miles just for racing and family vacations, you know, Mississippi and things like that. So it was a fun time for us to do it a different way than we did before, and to kind of incorporate that family part of it. We went from everything from some local sprint races that did take off. I was fortunate to have an early season race and in Fort Lauderdale. That was right March, so it was right as things were starting to look a little funny. And then went to Mississippi, was out in Mississippi at Deep South. That was a 70.3. And then even back to a couple races in Florida and Challenge Daytona. Here we ended up in December. So between that and some running races that we got in 11 times. So it was pretty crazy.
Wait, yeah, that's absolutely wild. Like I didn't even realize that you raced 11 times. Like that's, like literally kind of the opposite of everybody else's race season, right? Like everybody, like I think athletes that raced last year, like we're in the minority, like a majority of athletes didn't get the chance to race, whether it was just, you know, intentionally like saying, hey, those races will be there next year. I'm just going to hit pause and stay healthy, or whether it was because of cancellations and postponements. So to get 11 races in is really something. I mean, talk about getting good use out of that RV, right? Like 5,800 miles, getting all those races and getting to travel with the family is super cool. So from those 11 events, which few of them would you say really stood out in your mind as your favorites?
Yeah. So a couple of reasons that kind of, you know, waxed and wanes emotionally and stuff. We had some great family vacations and stuff. The top one, you know, maybe it's most recent was Challenge Daytona. Did that with the whole family. My mom raced 5K. My wife had a foot injury from stepping on my son's toy duck, so she couldn't run. My daughter did a triathlon, and I did a race. So that was amazing. In Florida, we did a Jacksonville Tri, and my stepmother, who unfortunately passed away in December, but she was able to be there and see me race. So that was really, really cool.
Oh, that is cool.
So the local series was also really special. There's no fans and it was really weird, but it was like me against the clock and me against my training and really dialed in with the coaches and what I wanted to perform and going out there three different times on the same course, the same race, and seeing the improvement I could make with the right training and the right choices, that was really special. So I hope I...
No, that is really cool.
You know, the answer now.
What improvement did you see throughout the year with your training and everything going as well as it did?
So I'm still new to triathlon. And, you know, this whole athlete thing is still new to me. So I've definitely improved in speed and in confidence, and was working on a little bit of those different ones each time. Coming out of, you know, making sure I had a confident swim and not blowing up on the swim, and then, okay, power on the bike, and then, hey, let's focus on the run. And so, through that, my times have improved. I PR'd almost every race I've done over the last, comparatively speaking. Some of the distances didn't all add up, but when you look at the time per minute, time per mile kind of thing, definitely just stark improvement by staying in the training, focusing on, you know, bike fitness, got a new bike positioning, bike fit. That's a huge thing for me. I learned a ton about that this year. And then learning to push myself, to where I thought, man, I can't believe I went this fast to, oh wow, I'm way faster than that now. So that was
awesome.
Good improvements. Yeah.
That's the dream. That's what we're all aspiring to, right? Is just a little bit better every day, a little bit better every race. And then you look back and it's cool to see how far you've come. So congrats on the good year, Dan. Now my one race of the year was also Challenge Daytona. Obviously I've talked about it on the podcast, several times, and I admittedly, I was one of those athletes that about halfway through the year, I was like, you know what? Like races will be there next year. I'm not looking for a reason or an excuse to get on a plane and travel. We're just going to stay home and keep training and next year kind of get back at it. And, Coach John Mayfield was really interested in doing Challenge Daytona, and he knows I have family in Florida. And so he was like, man, like let's go to Daytona and let's do that race. And, at first I was hesitant. Like I kind of, again, I'd already kind of mentally decided to just not race this year. And, so my grandfather, passed away back in June. He was very elderly. It was very expected. He lived a great life. But my family just kind of kept putting off doing a memorial service for, you know, just COVID precautions. And so finally in December, they booked his memorial service for the weekend after Challenge Daytona. And so, you know, they wanted me and my brother and several of us to fly in for it. And it was like, okay, well, I need to go honor him and his life and his legacy. And it was a privilege to do that with my family. And so I wasn't looking for a reason to travel for a race, but since I was traveling anyway, I was like, well, why not pack the bike and go do Challenge Daytona with John?
That's
since
awesome.
We're flying.
That's great.
Yeah. And so it really worked out well to get to do both of those. And I'm so glad I was able to, because one, you know, again, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but you know, the Challenge family did a great job of making sure that event was safe and distanced. And, at no point did I feel, like I was put in a bad situation because of racing. And it was just, it was so fun to get out there. It was a great atmosphere. It was great to, like you said, Dan, kind of take the training, take the fitness that was earned and see what it could do on the race course. I PR'd a 70.3 for me and was just thrilled. So, but I say all that to say, John Mayfield and I are walking up to the registration line and the first tried out people that we see is the Caskey family. And there's Dan, Andrew, John, what's up? And we had met before at previous events and chit chat a little bit. So we, you know, we knew you pretty well. But it was cool to see you guys there, you know, doing the sprint, to see your whole family there racing. And your daughter did the kids race. And that's one of the cool things about the Challenge family. I mean, they made it. It was a weekend long festival. There were multiple races of multiple distances. Tryout had athletes doing the duathlon, the aquathon, the kids race, the full, the sprint. Not the full, the half, the middle distance and the sprint. So tell me about your daughter's experience doing the kids race.
Yeah, Abigail, so she's 11 now. So she just aged up in October. And so she has done some local stuff and says, hey, I want to do triathlons. And it was awesome for her to kind of say, hey, Daddy, can I do that? In preparation, she was able to go to a triathlon camp that was kind of held here over the summer. So that was really cool. She's a fish. She's loved to swim since she was a little girl. And one of the things that got me into triathlon was that they opened a YMCA, you know, a mile from the house. Oh, so cool. She's on the Y swim team. So she was like, I was like, open water swim freaked me out. But she was like, okay, 200 meters, that's it. And I was like, yes, that's fearless. What you gotta do. She was like, so that didn't bother her at all. To see her line up there, I'm telling you, just such an emotional, like you can't describe the pride. It's one thing to do it for yourself and accomplish it, but to see her just fearlessly jump in there, man, that it was such a it was a crazy weekend. I was emotional. Like we lost my stepmother, on Friday, and she's racing Saturday. Wow. So it was just so cool. She didn't quit. She's not the fastest, and she's getting there. And but she got on the bike, and she new bike for her. You know, we got her a kind of a race bike, boy, she did great. She pushed through. We've taught her that we do hard things, and things are hard. She pushed through. Big emotional weekend. She's definitely gonna do more. She said. In fact, she signed up for 2021.
All right. Can't wait to see her out there. Dan, becoming a triathlete, you know, has just been a larger part of a health journey for you. You know, you've lost over 100 pounds just on your way to a healthier lifestyle. What inspired that journey for you, and how has triathlon helped?
Man, 5 years ago, I found myself stuck. I was just tired. I was miserable. I thought this was the lot I was dealt. But as a healthcare professional, I was telling people to get healthy and doing nothing about it myself. I was a hypocrite. As a father, I would drive my daughter to the park, which was less than a quarter mile from the house, sit in my car in the air conditioning because I couldn't play with her. Our church announced a mission trip to Kenya, a place that my wife had a heart for. She'd been mission trips before. We were both excited, but quickly said, man, I can't go. I'm overweight. I don't know if I can fit in an airplane seat. I'll get eaten by a lion. I'll die in the desert. And I realized that I had allowed my body and my health to limit my ability to serve God. And it's one thing to not have the time or the resources, but at the same time, this was something I was in control of. And we said no more. We said we had to change. We reached out to a college friend of ours who had been watching on her health journey. And she told us about a company called Isagenix and helped us. If we could put good stuff in our body, get the junk out, it would do what it was designed to do. And we would find that health we were looking for. So we said, okay, we'll give it 60 days. Well, that was nearly 5.5 years ago. Since then, we've had amazing results. I've lost over 110 pounds, almost 120. Since then, man, I've used Tryout, my nutrition to grow and excel as a triathlete, getting faster, healthier along the way. Now I'm more on the performance product side of things and recovery. I could never work out before because I couldn't recover well. So I've learned so much about that fourth discipline. And now triathlon helps me live an abundant life and share that with others. So that's been kind of how it's all fit together. And it's just so much fun. We're having a blast and it's been such a blessing to us. And now we're helping others.
Well, very good. So Dan, you know, you were able to get, you know, 11 events in, like you said, and a lot of those were the locally produced races, all the way to the sprint at Challenge Daytona, you know, a major race production company. What were some of the precautions that you saw events taking for COVID that athletes heading in the races this year should be aware of?
Sure. It was definitely a progression. The first race that I did was a local race, and it was kind of unknown. They were strict as no spectators, but they hadn't figured out things like temperature checks and screening profiles. It's basically said, if you're healthy, come. If you're not, don't show up. The race did do a rolling start. Was the first time this race, it is normally everybody jumps in waves. And so they had us go in a couple seconds apart. They were still figuring this whole 6 feet thing out. I think I had two bikes on the rack. There was just two bikes per rack or something. They had to mail all the trophies home, which for a ceramic mug and the United States Postal Service was a bad idea. Fortunately, I won one from every race, and none of mine got broke. So I was like, yes. So that was awesome. Then it progressed. Some of the other races, they started to do the temperature checks before the daily races. Definitely the post-race stuff kept just getting cut down. Nutrition changed a bunch. I know that affected a lot of people. And the rolling starts, you started to see. I felt like, as you did, Andrew, that by the time we showed up at Challenge Daytona, they had a really good system. Yeah. And of course, people had dealt with it for a while. And I think the triathlete community was really respectful at that time to say, hey, what seems to make sense? And they had these different areas set up. And you could see the different levels that people were going through inside buildings where it was crowds. They were, you know, doing more stuff than trying to keep everything outside. So it was an evolution. But those are the kind of things, wetsuits, not being no helpers with that was one of the big things, though. So.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And some of the takeaways just from listening to you that I want people to note is, on race morning, you know, maybe get there a little bit sooner than you normally would because there are temperature checks. You know, you want to make sure you have enough time to get through that. And, that there's not the traditional body marking line anymore. You know, a lot of races are asking people to body mark themselves ahead of time. You know, if that's just a Sharpie at home or using tri-tab set at home.
Florida didn't even require. I was gonna say Florida didn't even require any body markings.
Oh, really, Fireman Florida?
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Okay. So it was just on you that if you want those race pictures afterwards, you know, find a way to get the body marking on yourself beforehand, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were big about the bib, just making sure you had the bib on the run. That was, I think, I'm with that, Sarah, on that. Is that, you know, a couple of races didn't care about your bike as much, but you gotta have your bib on the run. Was pretty much all they said for marking.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah. And like you said, Dan, no wetsuit strippers. You had to take your wetsuit off on your own. Another thing you mentioned was the nutrition. I know the Challenge family, I know Ironman, Elizabeth, James, Coach John Mayfield and myself, we volunteered at an aid station at Ironman Florida. And so we firsthand saw kind of the differences in where the nutrition is. I mean, we were not allowed to hand nutrition to an athlete. An athlete had to take it from the table. So we were essentially standing multiple feet behind the table, keeping the table stocked for athletes to then grab things themselves. So all that stuff is still there. There's still nutrition on course. There's still water on course. There's just a little less help from volunteers. I know Challenge Family, they had less volunteers at each aid station. There were a fewer aid stations. And so just kind of know, maybe if you haven't carried a water bottle in the past for that long course race, maybe you carry a water bottle, you know, a little handheld one or something. Just knowing there's not going to be as many there. So just look into your course ahead of time. Look at what the aid stations are going to offer. Look at what their precautions are. Both Ironman and Challenge Family and a lot of local races are being very proactive about announcing ahead of time to athletes what those aid stations are going to have and what they're going to look like. So just make sure whatever your races are in 2021, as you head into them, you're doing your due diligence there to look up those. So Sarah, for you at the Ironman level, what were some of the differences that you saw Ironman tape? Because you raced, your first Ironman was back in 2014. So obviously no COVID precautions necessary. And then your second one was 2020. So just thinking between the two of those, what were some of the things that you saw that you'd want to point out?
Yeah. So, I mean, it started even just from packet pickup. You actually had to make a reservation to go pick up your packet. You couldn't just show up at any time and grab everything. They would check you in before you went to grab your packet. You had to stand in distance lines. Only athletes are allowed in, which typically you would take, you know, your family in, you would go to the expo, but only the athletes were actually allowed into the village. Even the shop after you checked in, and I think it's because they didn't know how many people were actually going to show up, but for every Ironman race I've done, I always buy the name shirt, the shirt that has all the names on the back, and they didn't have those there. You actually had to order those online, which is a bit of a bummer because it's nice to walk away from the shot, like see your name on the shirt and then walk away with it. But I had to end up ordering that one online. For bike check-in, so when you picked up your packet for bike check-in, you had to get a slip of paper that said, hey, I want to check in my bike at this time. And you had to bring that piece of paper and your timing chip the next day to actually to be able to check in your bike. You just don't, you can't just show up and drop it off.
Which that to me, Sarah, and you can answer this as from the athlete's perspective. I mean, that to me almost sounds better, like even non-COVID, because I mean, it's normally just such a crapshoot on you can show up early trying to beat the rush, or you can show up later trying to let the rush die down. And you just never know if you're going to get caught at the wrong time with a huge crowd trying to check in. And it almost sounds like a nice way to control how many people are checking in at once anyway, just logistically. Did you find yourself liking it, or was it kind of, what was it harder to try to pin down one narrow time window that you could go do all of that?
No, I don't think narrowing down the time window is a big deal. Again, it wasn't a big deal. I just picked a time I knew I would be there. But I mean, if you had issues maybe with flights getting canceled, it might become a little bit stressful if you're trying to pick up, you know, if you miss your first window, can you go pick up your window late, you know, pick up your packet at a later window. So I'm not sure about those, but it was fine. Dropping off the bike was fine. The first race I did, of course, you dropped off your bike at the bike rack, and then you dropped off your running bag in one section and your bike bag in another, because you would grab them and then go into the changing tents. Of course, this year there are no changing tents, so you drop both bags at your bike rack. So everything was there with you at that time.
So athletes that needed a change of clothes, did you see anybody just doing full-on changes out in the open, or do you know how anybody handled that?
I don't know how anybody did it. I didn't change. I made a conscious decision that I wasn't going to try to change out of anything wet. It's hard enough when you're trying to do it without trying to cover up, or, you know, do it in a porta potty.
Yeah.
Because so, it did say you could go change in porta potties, which that does not sound appealing to me.
I don't know logistically how I would pull that off.
It's hard enough. I mean, as a female, it's hard enough getting a sports bra off. So you don't need any other restrictions trying to, the first Ironman, I will say the women in the changing tent were amazing because they were pulling wet clothes off of everybody.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I would have been able to do it myself. But for race morning, you go into transition, and I honestly can't remember if I took stuff out of my bag or if I left stuff in my bag. It was kind of a blur, but you go in and you just stand by your bike and you wait for them to call you. They did a rolling, or they did a self-seated start, a rolling start. So they would call out, well, if you're going to be between, you know, these finish times for the swim, you know, line up, and you'd line up, and then you'd walk across the street. That I'm sure you guys saw it when you walked in, that very long line all the way across the street and then down to the beach and into corrals. And they were letting, same as Dan said, for his races, they were letting people go every couple seconds.
Yeah. I was very impressed at Ironman, for how controlled, that start was. I mean, cause they had essentially, Sarah, they had athletes four wide, with a couple of feet in between athletes four wide, and they had little individual cones for people to stand on. And so you were 6 feet behind the person in front of you. You were 6 feet in front of the person behind you. You're a couple feet away from the person to your right or left. And when you first saw it, you're like, man, this is going to take forever, but it didn't. You know, they were able to corral everybody and get them in a very controlled manner down to the beach, into the water, and within as much time as normal. You know, everybody was in the water and swimming and find the rest of the race. And you were, Dan, for you at local races for Challenge Family, and then Sarah for you at Ironman, it's masks on until the start and then masks back on once you finish, correct?
Yeah, they had a trash can right when the swim starts. So when they said, okay, you can go swim, they had trash cans right there that you dropped your mask in and then you went into the water.
Yeah, that way you could be in line without having to worry about, you know, people were like, well, I don't want to have my fans. And they were giving us, they gave you a disposable mask for the line. That way, if you preferred to wear a different type of mask, or you only same time, which, you know, if you're still hyperventilating, was just not. But I mean, they were legitimate about it. They were like, hey, use this, like, but everybody gave you a second, right? There was enough space in the finishing shoot and stuff like that to be able to timing chips. That was a different story. Like trying to stand still and bend over and get your, that was painful.
Yeah, I could not do that. I mean, at the end when I finished, they gave me the mask and they said, "We need your timing chip." I'm like, okay. And I stood there and the guy stood there and we just looked at each other. It was like a standoff. He goes, "Can you bend down and get it?" I'm like, "Are you kidding me? No."
No, I can't bend down right now. You know what I just did? I just ran a sub-12-hour Ironman.
I mean, but it was funny because we're both just standing there. He goes, "Can I take it off for you?" I'm like, "If you want it back, that's the only way you're going to get it." So
and shout out to all the volunteers because they are great. And I know they're dealing with, you know, some different procedures and things they're supposed to do and not do. And so shout out to all the volunteers who, help to make all the races happen. So.
Oh, heck yes. The volunteers, I will say too, the volunteers in transition were amazing. I know one guy came by, he's like, "Just give me, I know you have stuff here. Just give me your trash." And he had a trash bag. He's like, "Just throw your trash in here so you can keep it away from the rest of your stuff." So it was great. I will say the biggest change from my first race to Florida though, nobody else can go get your stuff after the race is over. Okay. Like when you drop your stuff, you know, when you start off on the run, before you were able to give people a ticket and they could go in and they could get your stuff for you, get it loaded up, and then you didn't have to worry about it at the end. Well, this year I had to go get my stuff by myself. So I crossed the finish line, they gave me my mask, they gave me a bag with the medal, a t-shirt, something else. They gave me a box of food. They took off my timing chip and they're like, "Okay, now go collect your things." I'm like, "You've got to be kidding me." So I, you know, shuffled on over to my bike rack and got everything situated. I was fortunate enough that Steve found somewhere that was on the other side of the barricades that he could stand and I could just pass everything over to him. So I didn't have to take anything too far. So he took my bike and all my bags over the barricades. And then he goes, "Here, this is the only thing you need right now," and handed me a cold Bud Light. So
so thinking back to all of these things that were just slightly different about your 2020 race experience, you know, what are kind of some last second, you know, we've talked about some things there, but you know, what are some guidance or tips that you would give athletes on handling these changes, that you learned that maybe you wish you had known going into the 2020 races?
So, I mean, just, it's not really what I learned, but I would say just as a mindset, make sure to just be prepared to be patient. Be ready to wait in the line, be ready to wear a mask when they ask you to. And again, I know we talked about this, but for the full distance, be prepared to find another way to change clothes if you want to do that, because there are no changing tents. But it's really just be patient and be respectful. That's what it's all about. I mean, if you're not respectful to the rules, then we're not going to be allowed to race. So.
Yeah. And Dan said it earlier. I mean, you know, the tri community is a very positive community by default. You know, we're all very, you know, typically optimistic and positive, you know, team player kind of people. And I mean, everybody at, I only went to one race this year, but the one race I went to, you know, everybody was very respectful and did what they needed to do. And, the Challenge Daytona swim start, you know, it was like the Ironman one. You know, they had cones out and we were supposed to stand on the cones, you know, appropriately distanced, and, you know, everybody was wearing masks and you could pitch the mask right before the swim start. And it was funny because on social media, there was a picture going around from the Challenge Daytona swim start where it looked like from a long way away from the other side of the lake, it looked like a big mass of athletes in wetsuits about to jump in the water. And people were like, "Oh my goodness. Like if we, you know, if we respect the rules, if we can't respect the rules on race day, like they're not going to let us race next year." And it was like, I don't know what angle that picture was taken from, like being out there as an athlete in the moment. Like I felt totally safe. I was totally distanced from everybody. I was never, I was literally standing with Coach John Mayfield and another trot out athlete. You know, we're all wearing our masks about to jump in the water. There wasn't another athlete around me, until you're jumping in about to swim and start the race. And so it felt very safe and very controlled. And I know, you know, it to some extent, you know, it's on the athletes to stay apart and to follow the rules. It's on the spectators to do the same. At Ironman Florida, there was certainly some spots along the course where spectators were grouping a little closer than maybe they should have, but Ironman can't control all 140 miles of the course, how close people are standing to each other. You know, it's kind of on us as spectators to be respectful of the rules. And for the most part, I saw people doing that. So
I'd say my favorite spectator, sorry to interrupt, my favorite spectator, they had a, they were giving the butt slaps, but it was the 6 foot, 6 foot stick that they were.
Yeah. They were at the run turnaround.
Yes.
And they had these giant plastic hands, basically on like broomsticks, and they were slapping runners in the butt with it, with from 6 feet apart. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. We saw them at the run turnaround. That was hilarious. Dan, at your events, you know, what were a couple last minute tips you would give to athletes heading into their next race?
I think the biggest thing is do you, you know, and we've said this as a family with what's going on is we have our standards. We know how we've chosen to protect ourselves to feel comfortable. And then just be prepared to see other people who are going to, you know, who feel different than you. Some people are, hey, keep your space and don't get near me. And they're nervous and uncomfortable. And they're going to, like, I've seen people running in masks, and that's on them. And other people, they'll come up and hug everybody they know. And so what I would say is don't worry about what other people think in that moment. Decide what you want to do for your family and what you're comfortable with, do it. And if you're ill or you've been exposed or somebody's ill or you get a weird feeling, just stay home.
Yeah, no, great point, Dan. I'm glad you pointed that out. Because I know for me, I mean, you know, my wife and I have been a little bit more cautious with you know, with COVID, and you know, we err on the side of staying home when we can stay home and you know, doing less instead of more. You know, we kind of recognize we have that luxury. There are people that have to go into their workplace, and there are people that have to go out and kind of put themselves out there a little bit more just by default of their lifestyle or their job. And we're both blessed with jobs that allow us to largely work from home. So, you know, we try to, you know, love our neighbor and keep our distance. And you know, so we recognize we're on the more conservative end of the spectrum. I felt totally safe out on the race course. Again, I was not looking to travel for a race this year, but I was pleasantly surprised by the experience. I did my research. And I want to point this out to folks. Now that we have kind of a sample size of races that have happened, you know, from local sprints and Olympics, from, you know, the local 70.3 on Alaska Tri that Sarah did and similar races like that, to the big Ironman and Challenge Family races that have a ton of athletes there. There have been no reports of athletes leaving those events getting sick, of athletes leaving those events feeling like they got exposed. You know, by default, our sport is outdoors, right? We're racing outdoors. We're moving through the air. We're not standing in one spot for very long. And so even that swim start where you are grouped together a little bit, you know, you're spread out, you're wearing a mask, you're not there very long, and it's been very controlled. And so to credit the sport, organizers are taking the precautions they can. Athletes are largely being respectful of the rules and each other. And it's been a great experience. So just kind of all the ups and downs, you know, the twists and turns of training in 2020, unsure if each race would happen, and then just navigating the differences of racing under COVID precautions. How much did having a coach help you through this year? You mentioned, you know, Coach Jeff Raines, you know, a podcast regular, is your coach. Coach John Mayfield, Sarah, is your coach. I do want to point out to people, I did not choose you guys specifically because of that. I promise. I've met you both. I've you know, heard your stories, and I just thought you'd be a great fit to kind of share your racing experiences this year. But Sarah, for you, how much did having a coach help you out?
Yeah, it was definitely a weird year. So I'm really glad that John was there for me to talk to when I was sick or unmotivated or traveling. And, you know, even signing up for On Alaska, he sent me a text one day and he goes, sign up. It's a go. It fits into your training plan for Florida. You know, just sign up. Okay. So that's how I ended up signing up for On Alaska.
Yes, coach.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes, sir. And then even towards the end, it's, you know, John doesn't live very far from me. So towards the end, when the rides were getting super long, I was able to ride with him and Joanna and a group of amazing women. So it was even nice just getting that time with him to talk about race strategy and, you know, how I was feeling. Of course, I bought a new bike in between On Alaska and Florida. So even talking about, okay, well, what's your strategy for where you're going to put the different things on your bike. So
beautiful blue Argon 18. Yeah.
It's very, very, I know, I got so jealous. Well, I mean, I have wheels that match now, so that's a plus.
Yes. Fantastic. Dan, for you, like what having Jeff Raines in your corner, having that coach kind of walking you through such a different year. What did that do for you?
And I think it was Monster, but I will give a shout out to you, Andrew. The podcasts were cool too. You can ask Jeff. He can tell what time on Monday I listen to the podcast. Just check his phone messages. I start to blow him up and say, hey, we need to talk about blah, 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 blah after each one. I think, Power Statement of Paradox was one that came out and really helped, right training, right goal setting. When it came out, just the doing the training when there's nothing inside, one of the more recent ones, was certainly good going forward is on prepping for May. But in that build decision, it was a critical time between, hey, do I go to 70.3 or do I get faster at this and then progress and then having to pivot, right? My Olympic is canceled. What the heck should I do now? I'm not ready for 70.3. And he'd say, hey, do a relay. Let's do it. So, sticking to that, having him in my ear to reassure me fast before far, strong before long.
Well, thank you both for coming on and just sharing your stories and your races. And I really hope people have heard, how much fun you guys had on course. I hope they were able to kind of get just what a great experience it was being out on course again. And we're excited out of our minds for athletes to get back to it in 2021 and to be able to cheer trotted athletes on at their local races, Olympic races, halves and fulls. We're excited for all of it, whatever folks are able to get in this year. So, as we move into the new year, just praying for a healthier world, hoping more people get back to racing. What are you both planning to race in 2021? Dan, what do you have lined up?
All right, so I'm going 70.3 Gulf Coast, May 15th. It's going to be my first, and I will not miss Challenge Daytona 2021. Already signed up, whole family signed up again, so we're stoked.
Yeah, no, great event, and we'll be very, very excited to see you cross the 70.3 threshold. I've noticed you say 70.3. I say 70.3.
I didn't know. Am I out of lingo?
I'm wondering now, because I'm sure we're going to hear about it now on Facebook. They're bringing it up, but I'm sure there's folks that say it like you say it, 70 dot. I'm sure there's folks that say it like I say it, 70 point. I mean, the Sarah, M dot, we call it an M dot logo. It's not an M point logo.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know which one.
I do 70.3. That's what I've always called it.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm wondering if
I want to be that vibe. I don't want to be the guy that shows up at the party, the triathlete who describes his race is the wrong dot or point, so I need to be in vibe. So let's see what the Facebook.
I'm sure you're not the only one. I'm actually, here's what I'm going to do. On the day this podcast comes out, we're recording this on a Friday. It's going to air on a Monday. Dan Caskey, I'm assigning to you on the I Am Trout Facebook group. Throw this out. I'm going to throw out the warm-up question. I want you to throw out, okay, do you guys say 70.3 or do you say 70.3? Do you say 140.6 or 140.6? And we're going to see what people say. So I'm super curious now.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's going to be a good one.
That's going to be Dan's homework. So guys, look for that post as well. Sarah, for you, what do you have coming up in 2021?
So far, I have Texas Ironman in April, Augusta 70.3 in September, and then I'm doing Florida again in November.
Wonderful. So I'm obviously also doing 140.6 Ironman Texas in April. So Sarah, have you started your race prep phase?
This week.
Yep. My long runs are starting to get longer, and it's getting real again. That's 16 weeks away. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
While I have Dan and Sarah with me today, I thought we would keep them on just a little bit longer for our cool down. From time to time on the podcast, we take a moment to throw out some new book recommendations for our readers in the audience. Whether you're firing up the Kindle during some R&R or throwing on an audiobook for a trainer session, it is always nice to have a new book in the queue ready to go. Dan, Sarah, what is a book that you have read lately that you recommend folks check out? Dan, we'll start with you.
Well, asking me to name just one book is like asking Jeff Rains to name just one flavor of goo that he enjoys. So I'm a...
Can't do it. I can't do it.
You told me about this, and I'm down to four on my desk, but I think I want to pull the triathlete and go with three. I'll shout out to the book called Grit, Angela Duckworth. I was surprised it didn't come up in that podcast, but it's a great, great story about West Point and a lot of science. If you like science, you're a nerd, you'll love that book. The Slight Edge, Jeff Olson, that's what helped me finish a half marathon, knowing that you do the things that once a day that are easy to not do, but they're easy to do that make a difference in the long run.
Yeah.
And a book that follows that is Change Anything by Peterson. That's a really cool book. Again, I'm a science nerd, so that's where I'm at with those three.
Very cool. We're going to take all three of those and make sure they're in the show notes so people can hit those titles up. Dan Caskey, book recommendations from today. Sarah St. Vincent, what is a book you would tell our folks to go check out?
So I will say the book that I have read on repeat for the past few months is Jelly in My Belly.
Fantastic.
So sadly, a lot of the reading I've done is just with my three-year-old, but at least she's a Wonder Woman fan, so we've also read Wonder Woman a whole bunch of times.
Very nice. So for all the parents in the audience, if you don't have Jelly in My Belly, that is a book recommendation from mother and triathlete Sarah St. Vincent. So Sarah, thanks for that. I'm going to give a quick shout out to one today. I really like memoirs. The thing with a memoir, though, is that they're either super interesting or they're just super boring because it's just somebody writing about themselves, right? And depending on how they do that, it can be interesting or not. And so I'm always cautious about which memoirs I choose to fire up. And I tried Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, the founder and owner of Nike. I looked at that one for a while and I kept going back and forth on do I want to try it or not. And I got it. I read it. And it was very, very interesting just to hear the early stages of the company and you know, how the Oregon Track Club kind of was the testing ground for a lot of the early Nike shoes and just hearing his story of kind of walking through from the inspiration for the company to where it is today. It was really, really interesting. And he shares a lot of personal stories, a lot of behind the scenes stories. And I loved every bit of it. So Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, whether you run in those Nike Vaporflies or not, it's a great read just to kind of see how a big time athletic company came to be.
We can even get Jeff Raines to read it since the shoe book.
If I can have Jeff Raines' voice reading Shoe Dog to me, that would just, that would be it. Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank athletes Sarah St. Vincent and Dan Caskey for sharing their back to racing experiences with us today. Shout out to Tri-Bike Transport for partnering with us on today's episode. As you get back to racing this year, head to tribiketransport.com to get your bike to the starting line. Have any triathlon questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Head to tridot.com/podcast and let us know what you're thinking. We'll have a new show coming your way soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training?